Across the UK, around the world, this is The Unexplained, this time on the internet with me, Howard Hughes. And it's so good to be able to say those words because we've been off the air for several months. And in all our lives, in yours and mine too, I guess there have been a lot of changes since then and we have a lot to catch up on. Now, the way that we're doing this show is, for the moment, I'm going to be producing by myself this podcast. Now, it's one of these things where you have to kind of fund it out of your own pocket, so I'm paying for this myself. But if you know anything about radio, even if you don't, I'll tell you, radio doesn't make anybody rich, so there will come a point where the money will run out, basically. So what I'm hoping to do is to be able to take this on to another level and get sponsorship or funding for it, you know, so that we can do it on an expanded basis and possibly be able even to, this is my aim, offer the program as a live streaming feed that you can phone into, just like a radio show. Possibly also, we might even try and take it to some radio stations. If you know of anybody who might be interested in getting behind this show, then I'd be very grateful to hear from you. Just email me through the website. Now, a few things to say before we get stuck into the content of this show. The first one is that I'm tremendously grateful, absolutely, personally, tremendously grateful to the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, and you know who you are, who emailed me when the show ended. The emails do not stop, and I'm doing this for you, really, because at the end of it all, I wasn't sure whether I wanted to continue with it, and now I'm sure that I do. And you're the reason why, I am sure. I hope this doesn't sound too cheesy, but you are the reason why I'm carrying on with this. Because there's a demand for it. Like I say, hundreds and hundreds of emails in my inbox. I've tried to reply to all of them. If I haven't got round to you yet, I promise you that I will. And you can always email me through the website. You know, this website will stay there. That I will guarantee. This podcast is a little later than I anticipated it to be, and the reason for that was the sad death recently of the person who was my greatest guide and support through my radio career, and the person who never missed an edition of The Unexplained. My mum and dad would sit there listening to the program each and every Saturday night, and my mum sadly left us unexpectedly 5 weeks or so ago. It's been an horrendous time, but I'm also doing this show for her. So that said, let's get on. Let's tell you what's in this first edition of the podcast, Unexplained. First of all, we'll have some words from Uri Geller, my good friend. I went to his home in the Thames Valley and we talked about the future of this show and the future of communication. We'll then talk to the woman behind a television series. This is the series called Medium. It's very big in America. It stars Patricia Arquette, and it's about a psychic detective. It's about a medium who has tremendous powers. I have met and interviewed the woman that the show is based on. She's an American psychic medium called Alison Dubois, and she will follow the words of Uri Geller. After Alison Dubois, we'll talk to Paola Harris, the UFO expert, who we haven't spoken to for quite a while. She's in Rome, and she has some new things to tell us that have happened in the last few months while we've been away. And we'll also go down to Milton Black, my friend, the astrologer in Australia, and we'll talk about some of the astrological predictions for this year of 2006 for particular well-known and famous people, including Tony Blair. Right, let's get into it. First off, Uri Geller, some words from him. I travelled a few weeks ago to his home in the Thames Valley, and here's what he had to say about this show.
I'm so happy that you have now your incredible show. And of course, this is for iPod users. And this is like a podcast. It's very different. It's very new, very unique.
Well, I don't know what you think about this, but, you know, there are whole new ways, platforms, they call them, to reach people. There are new ways of getting this information that is always so difficult to get out to people out there these days. We don't have to have radio stations in the way. We don't have to have television stations getting in the way. We can do this ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, the world shrunk incredibly since the age of the computer came to be. I remember, 30 years ago, people were communicating through telefaxes, telexes. And today, I walk in the street with my BlackBerry and I answer emails. Unbelievable. In airports, in cars, in restaurants. So I have a tiny little computer with me because I get about 300 emails a day. My website is urigeller.com and my email address is on it. And people simply reach me from Tokyo, Egypt, Siberia, unbelievable. So yes, you are right. Today we can send out information from hundreds of sources and it gets to people in a flash. People can be at work and they will tape or they will store information that they want to hear because they cannot listen to it at the moment. And they go home and they plug it in and they put the headphones on and there it is. All the information is available to people. But Howard, what I think that you and I will do, this is a small prediction, I have a very strong feeling that we will have a show together. It's going to be a worldwide show. It'll be international. It'll be heard probably on the internet. Maybe we will even have our own terrestrial radio program. And it's just an intuitive feeling I have that with your knowledge of being a broadcaster for so many decades, your professionalism is so incredible. You're so polished at what you do. Although I have my own radio show, this is not my field. But what is a field today? It's knowledge. If you know knowledge and if you can deliver it with the right medium, through the right medium, with passion, which you are passionate at what you do, at what you say. I can hear it in your mannerism, in your words, the way you deliver the message. I think that captivates people and they will want to listen to more.
And thanks to Uri Geller for backing this show and for also saying those words about this show. Uri will be back here and we'll talk about many, many subjects and also about some projects that he's got on the go very soon here on The Unexplained. Now, around about the time that the radio show came to an end, we were doing a lot of pieces with Paola Harris, the UFO investigator based in Rome, Italy. She's an American-Italian, and she was getting into some very exciting work, partly linked with something that I was doing too. You might remember back in November on the radio show, we tracked down and did an interview, the first one in the UK, and I think the first one in Europe, although I might be wrong about that, with a man called Paul Hellyer, the ex-Canadian defence minister. I think he was in office in the late 60s, early 70s, whatever, who is now saying, and how many politicians actually come out and say this, that actually there's more to UFOs and ufology than perhaps you've been told and perhaps you might already believe. Now, when somebody of his status, stature, and position in the world comes out and says that, he might be an old man, he might not be working as a politician right now, but you listen. And people did. I got so much response. Also, Paola Harris has met him, and that's why Paola Harris is online now from Rome, Italy. Paola, welcome to the new Unexplained.
Thank you so much, Howard. It's really an honor to be here, especially among your first guests.
No, it's all experimental, Paola. I'm actually sitting here with all this gear around me. I don't have a producer. I don't have a researcher. You know, all I have is my technology and my wits, and that's it. And I think that's quite exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's very futuristic.
Well, it is. But, you know, you do what I do. We're both interested in these subjects. We both want to get the information out there. And we both realize that unless we give it a little bit of a shove and a push ourselves and perhaps put, you know, whatever resources we have got to put into it, this stuff isn't going to happen. It's not going to get out there.
That's true. And it's so important because these are dealing with not only issues around the UFO field and the extraterrestrial field, but they're also dealing with policy issues in politics. That which is known as exopolitics is kind of a new branch of ufology.
And this was the word that Paul Hellyer, when I talked to him, introduced me to, this thing of exopolitics. That's politics, which is not dealing with political parties in the Eastern or Western blocs as they used to be in the Northern or Southern Hemisphere, but dealing with players in the political arena who are not from this planet.
Yes, actually, it's dealing with policy issues around contact, because it is absolutely a reality that we do have visitations. We're not sure where they come from or where these visitations, want to go with this. But we have to develop some kind of policies, some kind of plan about contact. And it can't just be governmental type situation. It will also have to be some kind of philosophy on a grassroots level. In other words, contact can also come from the everyday person that meets these people, these aliens, these extraterrestrials. They've been around for a very, very long time, Howard.
But if this is such a fact, and if ordinary people have made contact, which personally I'm inclined to believe that they have, and it happens an awful lot more than we will ever be fully aware of. How come this has been suppressed or hasn't become more public knowledge than it is now? How come this thing is the world's greatest kept secret, I guess is what I'm trying to say?
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. It is the world's greatest kept secret. But you have to look at the history of ufology, because the people that study it know that starting from 1947 with the crash at Roswell, there was a lot of advanced technology involved. And in those days, it was the Cold War. And the United States that was involved in keeping the secret under President Truman, who formed a group of people, a secret group of people called Majestic, or MJ-12, and they were people like physicists, people like military people, that had, you know, the knowledge of what really happened in Roswell, that there was really a crash, that there were really bodies, that there were real autopsies done, that there was a lot of technology retrieved from that crash. They had decided to keep that secret from the world, not only because they felt it would incite a panic, but it would also give the enemy the advanced technology.
Hey, Paola, by the sounds of that sound behind you there, the police siren, they're coming to get you.
Well, we have a lot of sirens here. I'm in Rome, Italy, for the people that don't know that. Rome, Italy is a big, big city like New York, like London, yeah, and so forth. And then we have that all the time.
Now, look, okay, MJ-12, Majestic 12, we've seen films about it. There was the series Dark Skies on television all about that, too. If such a thing existed, how come the lid has been kept upon this and the way that it operated for so many years? It's only now that we have people like Paul Hellyer, who we're about to talk about, that the lid is really beginning to be prized off that jar.
Well, actually, I think it still exists. It existed, and it was secret. It was a secret group. It's like what they call a shadow government, a government within the government. More military that are dealing with this than the actual president, senators, and representatives that are elected. It's kind of a military secret because they're military technology that they're dealing with. The technology that was back engineered, and we know this, was brought to Area 51, where we've had some advanced airplanes that have advanced technology in them, and some airplanes we don't even know about, and other kinds of things. The book The Day After Roswell by Colonel Philip Corso, for me, is a milestone in ufology. It has the list of back-engineered items out of the Roswell crash, the fiber optics, the microchip, the night screening devices, and all of that. And Colonel Corso said, we were working with that. It was top secret. We told people it was foreign technology, but it got really foreign. It's alien technology.
Now, when I talked to Paul Hellyer at the end of last year on the radio show, he said that the one factor that turned his mind in all of this and made him believe in its credibility was what Corso had written. It was very influential. It was terribly important to him.
Well, the book The Day After Roswell, written by Philip Corso, is what Paul Hellyer read. Now, if we want to go to Paul Hellyer, when I interviewed him, and I did fly to Canada in March and interviewed him in person, I asked him if he already knew about UFOs or if this was something recent. I think he was very political. He said that since he was retired, because usually the people are retired, he took an interest in it after Colonel Corso's book. But then he called some military people, a four-star general, and it confirmed what the book said. So he said, this is an important policy issue. It's important for national security, yes, but if Canada is going to buy into a missile shield, who are we shooting at? He said, obviously, he said, the SDI program is not for anything on Earth. And the idea that Bush would build a base on the moon is extremely questionable.
And in the news right now is more planning towards NASA doing exactly that, having more missions to the moon, towards building a base on the moon. In fact, even now, this week in the UK, they're talking about getting a British astronaut involved in one of the first missions to the moon.
Well, you know something, Howard, if this was exploratory, everybody would be going, hooray, yay, oh, we're going into space the way we see it in science fiction. But let's really look at this. It is a military program at first. anything. Even the back-engineered artifacts from Roswell were used for military purposes. And Colonel Corso said they could have been used in the hospitals. They could have been used to benefit mankind. So we got a problem here. It's an earthly problem. It's a problem with our species. It's a problem with humanity that we use all this advanced technology first for military purposes and exploration, too, unfortunately. If we were going to go there to find out what was on the moon and use it for geology and so forth, that might be really positive. But what happens if we go there to establish a base? And then it's the country that gets there first. The Americans aren't the only ones. I don't know if you know, but the Chinese may get there first.
Sure, and I always believed that what this was all about was the rights to whatever mineral resources may be on the moon, because somebody could make a fortune from that. But there may be more to this, you think?
Actually, yes. It depends on what the intentions are. Can you imagine controlling the outer space, controlling the area from outer space? But I think we're sitting here looking at the possibility of that, but I don't think if there are ETs out there, they're going to let that happen.
Of all the things that Paul Hellyer said to you when you met him, and I'd have loved the chance to actually stare into his eyes and talk to him face-to-face like you did, what was the most interesting, swaying, convincing thing the man said?
Well, the actual word-for-word transcript is on my website. The most interesting thing, as far as I'm concerned, he said that all these military dollars that Canada would spend on a missile shield could go into helping the planet end starvation, helping the planet with ecology, helping us first on this planet to solve our problems. And then he said if there was truly contact, that we should be cooperating and working with intergalactic diplomacy. And I love that word, intergalactic diplomacy, which means he said we could ask these visitors to help us make a better galaxy, or galaxies, he said, plural. And he said we could cooperate on an intergalactic level.
Which sounds really good, but the fact that the message about all of this is not getting out, if you follow that line of argument, suggests that somebody somewhere doesn't want that particular utopian view of things to come about.
Well, I wonder what somebody thinks the aliens are like. Paul Hellyer asked me, he said, well, can you give me the facts and figures on how they figured out that these aliens are hostile, since they've never acted against us? He asked me that, because he also asked me a few questions about the UFO research. He said, what makes people think that these people are hostile, that these aliens are hostile, and why would we be shooting at them? So he asked some very good questions himself about this, because he's sincerely interested, and he's got a serious background in defense. So not only he, but there are other people in politics. For instance, when there was the incident in Mexico, the defense minister there released that particular film footage with the 11 UFOs around the military planes. And if the defense minister of Mexico is releasing this, then other countries are really into asking for help about what's really happening in space, about what's really happening in our skies.
And so what do you think, Paula? Do you really think that 2006, as we've all hoped every year, is going to be the year of real revelations, of facts getting out there that we couldn't possibly have imagined before? Or is this going to be just another year of chasing our tails and reporting stories of sightings, and perhaps there's going to be the odd Paul Hellyer coming out of the woodwork and talking about things that might have happened 40 years ago? Or will this be the big year?
Well, it depends. We have a huge conference in Hawaii on June 9th through 11th, where Paul Hellyer will be personally present, and so will Ambassador John McDonnell, and so will a lot of other, very, very top-level players. It is an intergalactic diplomacy kind of conference. And during this conference, there will be a lot of dialogue, a lot of serious dialogue. It will not be what I call a UFO party, where people go and just, enjoy the talk and then walk around and buy all the T-shirts and the products. This will be a serious conference.
I want to get you quickly onto something else now, because I know we'll talk around the time of the conference as well. And this being a podcast, our time is a little limited. But I want to get you onto this. My interest was peaked, was it January, February this year, when I read your reports of UFO sightings in Italy. And as far as I am aware, those UFO sightings might have made your press in Italy, but they didn't make ours here in the UK.
Well, there were six UFOs over the city of Milano, which is a very large city. And it was February 6th, and it went from, the sighting went from 11 o'clock at night till 5 in the morning. Now, that's a long time for those things to be sitting up there. The airport said that they didn't sight them on the radar, so they didn't think they needed to chase after them. The official photos were taken by the newspaper. They weren't taken by a regular, you know, citizen. And that sighting is very major. But what's happening in Mexico, Howard, is 10 times more powerful. And it's happening a lot more often. And it's 200 spheres in the sky and 400 spheres in the sky over Mexico City. So we have around the world huge manifestations of UFOs, whether they sit there for 5 hours or whether there's numerous sightings. It's happening this year.
And we're also into the crop circle season. I heard on another radio show out of America, Major Ed Dames, the remote viewer, predicting where the next crop circle of not earthly origin would be found. And he said that was, I think, it was, did he say it was in around Manitoba, Canada? It was certainly up in Canada.
Well, that's another cosmic message. Whether we have these huge sightings or whether we have a crop circle that has, like the one in Chilbolton that had an Arecibo reply, I don't know how many people really study this field, but if they connect the dots, and that happens to be the name of my book, they'll figure out something is coming down, something is happening, and there's going to be an awakening on the planet.
And even if they don't see the evidence in the media, if the media is not reporting it or not doing their job properly, whatever, I think there are people in this world, and maybe I'm one of them, and maybe you're one of them too, who feel that something's going to happen. We, you know, we're all animals, and we have instincts and feelings and senses that perhaps are not fully understood. And there is a feeling that something is going to happen. We don't know what it is, but there is that feeling.
There is that feeling. It's tied to our earthly politics. We're in a tense situation right now. We're turning the corner. We could auto-destroy ourselves, or we could keep going. We could go on with the wars. We could do all kinds of things. And I think that the people or the aliens or the cosmic civilizations that are watching us are going to see if we're going to survive this.
Well, Paola, listen, we both are funding our own work, and we're both, you know, of the belief that this is important stuff to get out there. Me through my website and you through yours. What is your website?
My website, there are two. It's www.paolaharris.it, and there's one, www.exopolitics-italy-it.
Okay, if you're hearing this wherever you are, whatever time of day it is right now, go to those websites, read what is there, and make your own mind up, and drop me an email, tell me what you think, and even email Paola, because I'm sure you'd be pleased to hear from people in the UK, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
All right, Paola Harris, thank you for being part of the new Unexplained here on the internet. Now, coming next, in the last week or so, the woman who inspired the television series Medium has been visiting London. It's just been a trip to promote the start of the series on the Sci-Fi channel here. Now, Medium, if you haven't seen it, stars Patricia Arquette, and it is about what you might call a psychic detective, a person with psychic mediumship gifts. It's been a very successful program in America, and it is based on the life of Alison Dubois, and I was lucky enough to grab 10 minutes with Alison Dubois the other day, and here's what she said.
Everything has its right timing, and it was just time for people to see mediums in a different light, and it's very interesting. I get a lot of mail from people saying thank you, you know, for the show, because I can relate to certain aspects of it, and it makes me feel like I'm not alone, and I think that's probably the most productive thing of the show, and I love that.
Because that's a feeling that people have had for generations and generations, isn't it? This desire to feel that when we die, it isn't the end of everything.
Well, sure, I mean, just on the face value of that, nobody wants to believe that when we die that we're just gone, even though some people do believe that. I think most people feel in their heart, whether or not they believe in mediums or not, they feel in their heart that the people that pass that love them are still around.
Well, exactly. And this, I have to tell you, there's a personal dimension to this, and I never expected us to be talking about this. But 5 weeks ago, my own dear mother, who was a great inspiration to me, died suddenly.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Now, I suppose I've talked to a lot of mediums in my time, and they all seem to have a slightly different take on how they communicate with people who've passed. Let me tell you my story. I've always been a little bit this way inclined, and, you know, most of our family have been too. And in a semi-awake, semi-dreaming state a week ago, I believe I had a conversation with her. Perhaps I'm deluded, I don't know, but is that how it happens, do you think?
That is how it happens, and a lot of people get it, you know, the information or the visits, I call them visits, in their sleep because your defenses are down. So you're not blocking them out. You're not paining at the time, you know. You're not blocked by pain because you're in sleep. So it's actually very common to have visits after people pass away, and it's one of the just most wonderful gifts that, you know, your mother or anybody who has lost somebody can receive or give to somebody they love. And they do work very hard to let you know they're okay. So I think that's wonderful.
Well, it's strange, Alison. Her first question to me was, are you okay? And then I started asking her questions about what it was like there, and she faded away. So I guess our time was up.
Well, and they will do that sometimes when you start asking them questions, because it's not what it's about to them. It's about them, about you. Not about where they are, but about how you are.
Now, listen, on radio and in other places, I've talked to many mediums over the years, and they do, as we say, have a different take on how you do this communication.
Sure.
Some mediums hear voices displaced to one side of their head, and others see pictures. What's your preferred method?
Well, I'm just lucky, I guess. I get the whole ball of wax. I can see them and I can hear them. So it would be very frustrating for me. I know with my brother, he can see them, but he can't hear them.
Right.
And I can't imagine having that. I'd rather be able to hear him and not see him, but, you know, just to communicate with him.
And do you get clever interviewers, people talking to you for magazines or radio programs like this one, who want you to do this thing on demand? In other words, say, you know, who can you see right now?
You know, of course. I mean, I've had that demand made of me, and I always, like, you know, I do say, you know, I'm not doing this for a sideshow or like a circus. It's a reading is very personal and it's private, and when people are in the mode of being an interviewer, they're not truly hearing what we're saying or receiving the method, because it's being done for work, not for necessarily you just as a person that's not on guard. So it's just not the same effect. But I have done that. It's not that I haven't done that. I was trained in a laboratory, you know, to be able to do that, you know, on command. And so, of course, I have.
Because that's the problem, isn't it? I know Uri Geller quite well. And he, of course, has been probed and tested and explored and checked out so many times by people who call themselves experts. And the
right.
difficulty is always, how do you deliver when you need to? Because there is some need to, so that people can believe that, you know, these things may well exist. You know, how do you do it? How do you put yourself in the frame of mind that there is a likelihood it might happen?
Well, to me, it's because the person who's deceased has already been asked to be there by a living person.
Right.
So it's really not always up to me necessarily.
So they open the door and you just walk through it.
Sure. I mean, that happens. I mean, I read 40 people in 2.5 hours at a murdered children's conference. I mean, you know, that's was not intended to happen at the time. It kind of happened naturally.
Now, this is one of the things that you do, and it's always interesting because there are cases where the police, both sides of the Atlantic, call in psychics and mediums. They don't tend to talk about it, but they do. And it's often used to trace, for example, missing murdered children or children presumed to be missing. All of that stuff is tied up in such a lot of emotion. How do you cut the emotion out of it to be able to do what you would see as your job?
Well, you know, I have three daughters, little girls of my own, and, you know, the way I look at it is I can't make it about me. As much as it hurts and it's hard to see, you know, the visions that we see, it has to be about a little justice for the victims and not me being a martyr, or, you know, people feeling bad that I have to see what I see or hear what I hear, but just me doing what I need to do to make it okay for somebody else. And I think that keeps me pretty focused.
Sure. Now, we know that our time is limited here right now doing this, but what do you think is the most, the case that you've worked on for police as a psychic detective, for want of a better phrase, that has brought you the most satisfaction?
Oh boy. Well, I got to tell you, when they're actually alive, like the Circa case, there were three people missing. They were presumed carjacked and murdered, and it was all over the news that they were dead. And I knew, in fact, they were not. And I was able to give solace to the daughters and actually tell them when they would be found. And, you know, that's very rewarding to me to know that it's not going to end with a burial. It's going to end with a reunion of family members. And it's very gratifying. Those keep me going.
And are you always right? Right more often than not. What's your hit rate?
Well, I've been tested in the lab on bringing through people who have passed. And of course, we're scored by the living people who we brought through the information for. And I always score anywhere between, you know, 78% and 90%, depending on which, you know, reading you look at. That, but they've all been published on academic journals and such. But as far as cases, I've never actually run the statistics on it. I just know the information I've given has helped move cases forward and conclude others.
Well, like we say, our time is limited, so let me ask you the tour guide bit. What do you think of the UK? What are you here to do?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm here with my assistant, Jen, and we kind of ran all over London yesterday. We had a really good time. It's very beautiful, and I had never actually gotten to spend any time here, but I found the people to be, you know, lovely, and I really did enjoy it. And there's so much history here, so I'm sure I'll be returning
in
a future date. But, you know, God bless you, and, you know, you can, when you go to sleep too, you know, ask your mom to visit, and they do, and you know, they're not gone, and and I think I'm very sorry, though. I know how hard that is.
Well, it is tough, but the only thing that that kind of keeps me going, like a lot of other people, is the belief that there is more to it all. There has to be more to it all than we actually see. Listen, Alison, thank you very much, and I'm glad you were able to make this very short window of opportunity for us to talk. Have a lovely time in the UK, and I hope that one of these days we meet in the flesh.
That sounds great. I'd love that. Thank you.
And many thanks to Alison Dubois, the medium on whom the television series Medium is based, and that is now on the Sci-Fi channel in the UK, and I'm sure it'll show up in various other places too, but if you want to see it, it's been a massive hit in the US. Got very, very good ratings for the network that it's on there, but well worth seeing, and the medium in that program is basically a psychic detective, like we were talking with Alison about. And she tells me she's going to be coming back to the UK at some point, and when she does, I will certainly get her here on The Unexplained. Now, a good friend of mine and of The Unexplained and all the radio work I've done in recent years has been Milton Black. He's an Australian astrologer and is a man who has quite a reputation down there. So much of a reputation, I have to say, I was staying in a hotel in Cardiff doing some work a few weeks back. And I said to the girl on reception, I said, you're Australian, aren't you? And she said, yeah. I said, where are you from? She said, Canberra. I said, oh, I know somebody from Canberra, Milton Black. She said, and she was probably, what, 24, 25, Milton Black, he's famous. Milton, in Canberra, you're famous.
Oh, well, that's nice to know, isn't it? Yeah.
I guess it's gratifying to know you're appreciated, isn't it?
Well, it is, and of course, it's nice to know Australians are working in Cardiff.
Yeah, no, she was getting, a lot of Aussies do this, you know, and I think a lot of Brits do this as well in reverse. In their 20s, they go and do some work experience, get to see how the other half live.
Indeed.
I'll tell you the truth, frankly, if it was me now and I was in my 20s and I came down to Australia to do some work experience, I'd probably stay.
You're most welcome down here any time.
No, it's a great country.
I wouldn't want to come down here at the moment, though. It's just coming into winter, and, of course, you guys up there are going into spring into summer, so I'd stay up there just at this moment.
Yeah, it's total reverse of seasons now, and, you know, in common with a lot of the world at the moment, Milton, there's been some really funny weather. I've been taking stock of it these months that I've been off the air. I've been taking stock of exactly what's been happening around the world, and we've seen cyclones in the last few days in America. Rather twisters, you know, tornadoes, and there's been a big cyclone there in Australia. All sorts of weird and wacky weather, and the seasons are all over the place up here in the Northern Hemisphere. You know, it's very odd what's going on.
Well, it is, Howard, and I think the most important thing to remember, too, is that for the first time in 12 years, that Jupiter, which really stirs up the big energies on things, is moving into Scorpio in a fairly consistent rate at the moment, but it's in retrograde, what we call retrograde. It doesn't really come into its full motion from until July, about the first week of July, and then it rushes through and comes to a big crescendo around about October, November of this year. So consequently, we are going to see this continuous change of weather patterns coming up around the world, both in the Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere. So you'll have your hot summers coming in, lots of cold winds too that'll come up there in the Northern Hemispheres, and you'll get the hot winds too all of a sudden, you know, so it'll go from hot to cold. And down in the Southern Hemisphere, they're going to have very severe snowstorms, and you'll get those flood periods and things like that coming up this year too. So it is going to be one of those 12-year cycles of weather change. But rug up or get cool, get the air conditioning, whatever the climate you're in, you know, but it's certainly going to be very, very difficult this year.
Well, I think so too, and certainly the long-term forecast for the month of May, which of course we're in for the UK, says that it's going to be colder. But the weird thing about it being colder than it should be is that you would expect, especially in this country, for there to be rain connected with that. And they're not saying we're going to get the rain that we so badly need. This is all part of this drought situation that this country and others are going through at the moment. It's all very bizarre.
Absolutely. And this is where Jupiter in Scorpio, and Scorpio is very much a water sign, it's going to create this incredible change of pattern with weather, but we will get rain. You'll get rain in the northern, you'll get rain in the southern. And I would say from July the 4th, running through until about at least December 12, is where we're going to have our big weather pattern changes. You'll get your rain. We'll get the sunny weather. You'll get the fine weather up there too. I mean, it's just going to be an incredible reproduction period of weather forecasting. And I can assure you that farmers are not going to be disappointed in this next 8 months. Well, it's only 8 months to Christmas anyhow. But there is going to be this really good pattern of weather that will come up and help farmers with good production over this next 8 to 12 month period.
Well, I think they certainly need the help. And I'll tell you something, just moving on to another topic here, because it's something we talked about a lot. When we did our first piece on The Unexplained, of course, we had to mention Tony Blair and the government then. And I think it was around about election time, the last election here in the UK, which was last year. And you told me, and you haven't been the only one to tell me this, that Tony Blair and his government were heading for trouble. Well, this year of 2006, as you will know down there, as you, I'm sure, have been reading down there, his government has gone from crisis to crisis to crisis. His Home Secretary involved in a row about releasing foreign prisoners who should have been deported but have just disappeared into nowhere in this country. A lot of them, people don't know where they've gone. John Prescott, the Deputy Prime Minister, involved in an affair, so that's a sex scandal in the party. There's been a problem about loans. Tony Blair himself not looking so good on health service policy. Lots of opposition to that. So exactly what you said has come to pass, and what other people have said, that Tony Blair and his government, very early on in this term of their government, are not doing well.
Now, that's quite correct too. And obviously, with Tony Blair's chart at this stage, you've got to look at the whole concept of this next 8 to 12 months. Tony Blair is moving out of politics. He is actually sort of moving away. He's trying to take the easy way out. I think the Iraq war, Iran coming in at this stage too, is going to put a little bit more pressure on it, as you just mentioned there, with his sex scandals with other members of parliament are causing great problems for him. But I think Tony Blair has come to a stage in his life with Saturn crossing in now to a very positive and direct position in his horoscope. He's sort of coming to a decision period here, Howard, where he is going to make his move. Now, he will move out of politics quite, I would say, positively, not negatively, over this next 12 months. But it's not going to be a disaster for the UK or any associated political moves around him at this point. I can see Tony Blair moving out of politics very nicely. And there's nothing in his horoscope that indicates to me that he's going to be a martyr to anybody. He's going to be like, a John Howard to a certain degree down here. He's just going to move out very, very quickly and very nicely.
So as we say up here, Milton, he's going to go while the going's good. He will pick a becalmed period, a calm period in it all, and will decide, okay, this is my opportunity. I'm going to go.
Yes, I do feel so, because I can't see anything in his horoscope at this stage, Howard, that sort of shows a negative note. You know, he's a very strange sort of a Leo person, in so much as that Saturn is crossing his sun, but he's also got this great sort of panache about him. He's still got the popularity around the world, even though he may not have it in the UK itself. He's a great friend of Bush. He's a great friend of Howard's. He's a great friend of Pakistani leaders. He's a great friend of everybody.
Which is all very nice. The only problem is that he's got himself so tightly in with the Bush administration in the US. Bush is having his problems. A poll a week ago or so, I think, rated his opinion poll rankings, his appreciation by the public, as being the lowest that it's more or less ever been. He's got problems with Dick Cheney, the US vice president, who might well end up being the fall guy for all of this. But, you know, if you tie your fortunes to President Bush, then can things be that good for you? Because Bush and Cheney are not having a great time either.
Oh, definitely not. And of course, Dick Cheney, you know, being a stubborn sort of Aquarian, you could say, because he was actually born on the 30th of January 1941, and being the great American politician that he was, he's very anti sort of things. Now, as a running mate for George Bush over the 2000 election, of course, he bought this great GOP ticket of wealth and foreign policy experience, political stature, and formally served the cabinet and the President George Bush sort of regime. But, you know, he's a sort of a rock-solid conservative, this guy, and Cheney opposes abortion rights, he opposes gun control, and he has opposed the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, all these sort of things, and he's voted against environmental cleanups, and has supported oil drilling and Alaska wilderness and all these sort of things. And he's a staunch supporter of defense and the production of chemical weapons and all this sort of thing. And he supports the death penalty too. Now, of course, the average American is sort of saying, wow, hold on a minute there, Dick. You know, we're not going this way. But he favors the raising of a Social Security retirement from the age of 65 to 67. He opposes the coverage of long-term care for chronically ill and all
and,
these
and the list
things.
Goes on. So what we're saying is you've got a man who is going in one direction while the rest of the population is going in the other direction, and he's so inflexible he can't change.
No, that's true. And this is where there is going to be some confliction here. And, of course, Bush being a Leo, a Cancer, I should say, and also with Dick Cheney being the Aquarian, there is a confliction here. And there is going to be problems in regards to policy. I mean, the fact is that the president is going to say one thing, Dick's going to sort of say, well, we can't have that. We're going to go off on another idea.
So, Milton, when do you think that Dick Cheney is going to be out? Because the smart money says he's going to be.
Oh, he will be. But I can't see anything happening to Dick Cheney. He's a stayer. You see, this is the lucky thing about Dick Cheney. He is a stayer. He's got people that are going to be on side with him. And I can't see him making any major moves until at least the 12th of December this year.
Okay, that's the politics. I wanted to throw a wild card at you finally. George Michael. Now, I met George Michael once. I think he's a great entertainer. He's a man who's had his problems in his life, but he's given a great deal, not only to charity, but just to those of us who buy his records. George Michael's had a few problems lately. I'm sure you've read about them. There was one incident in a car, and indeed another incident in a car. He allegedly drove into, by accident, whatever, some vehicles in London, and it was all very embarrassing. It was all over the newspapers, and you know, these are small embarrassments down the track, but they all indicate that things may not be that good with him.
Well, most people do say so, but here again, he's got an opportunity from the 4th of July, strange as it may be, that's Independence Day for the Americans. But from about that period onwards, he's going to make a great move into a new direction. I do feel you'll see this man pick himself up and go off into this wonderful new direction. He's going to come out clean as a whistle between now and the end of this year. As a matter of fact, from the 18th of October through to about the 14th of December is a very, very good time for him. And strange as it may seem, everybody's going against him, but the guy seems to have this turncoat situation about him where he gets himself out of trouble media-wise or his own internal sort of following or whatever you might like to call it.
And the good thing about him is that he's got friends in the business. A lot of people in the media, the music business, like him.
Yeah, absolutely. It's this sort of turnaround situation that's going to put him into a new track. You'll see some wonderful news about this guy between now and the end of this year, so don't write him off just at this stage.
We're going to talk about that again. I'll run that past you in July when we're there, Milton. Very, very quickly, we've only got a couple of minutes. The Queen, she celebrated very recently her 80th birthday, and around the world, I noticed New Zealand had a big do, and so did Australia. Everybody's celebrating for the Queen. What do we think of her prospects? Is she going to abdicate? Is she going to continue until the natural end of things for her? What is she going to do?
She will never abdicate. Howard, I can tell you that right here and now. The Queen is a wonderful person. She gets a great deal of satisfaction by being 80 plus. As a matter of fact, she's 80, but she's actually 57. That's how she feels at the moment. And she will continue to be this way. She is a woman with great stature, great class, great integrity, tenacity. You could name everything, and she is it.
And do you think that Australia will ever dump her as head of state? Because this one reared its head a couple of weeks back again, too.
Never, Howard. They'll never dump her as the head of state. I mean, admittedly, Australia will go into its own direction later on. But as far as this denomination of queen and heritage and Australia's queen is concerned, look, she's here to stay. She's Australians love her. They do love her. Even though we all want to go into this great direction of our own, we still love the lady. And she is the most incredible woman. She's born on the 21st, absolutely an incredible person with so much tenacity, as I said. And she's got this 50-year-old attitude about her. She'll never, ever grow old. Yeah, she's 80 going 50. And Charles is going to sit there with Camilla and say, come on, mother, move over, but she will never do that.
And as we all suspected, she's not going to do it. Now, Milton, every time I have you on The Unexplained, I get so many emails from people who want to know how to get in touch with you and to read about you. So how do you do that?
Well, all I've got to go to my website, miltonblack.com.au, go to any server and they'll just put you straight onto it. And I'm coming over to the UK shortly. And when I say shortly, very soon. And I'll tell you what, Howard, you and I are going to zoom around and do some broadcasting together, because I can assure you all the emails that I am getting from the UK and off my website. Do you know I get something like around about 26 million hits a year on my website?
Good God, Milton, that's half the population of the UK.
And,
it's amazing.
And it's really good. And I must say, a lot of them are coming from the UK, though, Howard. But it is incredible. And I've got my daily horoscopes going from the UK to now, which they can ring. You know, people can do that. But they can go to the website and have a look at that one. But when I come to the UK, I've got some great opportunities to go on to British television there and radio. But I want Howard Hughes to be there with me when I do it.
Hey, now that would be fabulous, because I have a feeling I may have been the person who put you on air in the UK first. I think I might be right.
Were.
Yep.
I think you were 100%. As a matter of fact, if it wasn't for Howard Hughes, Milton Blake wouldn't be so popular in the damn UK.
Thank you to Milton Black. Always good value. And don't forget, his website is miltonblack.com if you'd like to know more about him. Milton Black coming to the UK. And when he comes to the UK, we'll certainly get him on this podcast. Well, this has been the first edition of the Unexplained podcast. I have to thank Graham Mullins, my webmaster, top guy, and my friends at Media Cube for helping me to put it together, for helping me get it out to you on the internet. If you want to know more about Media Cube, go to mediacube.co.uk. Now, obviously, this is something new, and it's something that I'm having to teach myself. I'm having to learn the technology. I'm having to learn how to do this by myself, which is fascinating. It's interesting. The technology is a lot easier than it used to be, I can tell you that. And let's see where it goes. Let's give it our best shot. Please tell your friends about this. If you have a story that you think we should be telling on the show, if you'd like to tell it yourself, drop me an email and I will get straight back to you. We might put you on the show and let everybody hear the story. I think this is possibly the future of broadcasting. We might be right at the forefront of it. Who knows? Let's find out. Let's go on the journey together. Thank you very much for supporting me and the show, and I hope to see you very soon on the next edition of The Unexplained.